This is Sheffield Live.
We're open for business live.
Begbies Trainer is an independent business rescue and recovery specialist. If your business has financial challenges requiring professional insight and solutions, Begbies Trainer can help. We provide advice designed to help people and companies deal successfully with debt and financial problems. And wherever possible, we will find the best solution that allows for active steps towards financial recovery. Begbies Trainer is an independent business rescue and recovery specialist. We're committed to providing a rapid and responsive service based on in-depth experience, professionalism and independent specialist expertise. Contact our Sheffield office or visit begbies-trainergroup.com.
We're open for business live.
Good morning. It's just after 9 o'clock. It's Friday. It's the 20th of January 2017. My name is Jamie Veitch. I'm your host for the next hour for Sheffield Live's business and social enterprise programme, Business Live. And we're broadcasting live here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM and through our internet live stream at sheffieldlive.org. This programme will also be available as a podcast later from the Sheffield Live website. So, random acts of kindness, sticking to your goals, and fairness in work. Those are some of the topics we'll be discussing today with our guests. In the studio, we're going to be joined today by Martin Bennett. He runs his business MJB Coaching, which he set up in 2016, and he's going to be telling you how to meet your business and your personal goals in 2017. Later in the show also, we're joined by Johnny Douglas. Johnny is a bit of a polymath. He's involved in many, many things, from Made by Design, his business, through to Sheffield Soup, Petcha Kucha, and much, much more. So I'm really looking forward to chatting with both of our guests this morning, and plenty for you to get your teeth into with their advice, with their tips, with their insights and knowledge. But before we turn to our guests, what's going on in business and in social enterprise? Well, new figures have been released by Visit Britain, which demonstrate that Yorkshire welcomed a record-breaking number of visitors in the summer of 2016. Between July and September, the region saw a 12% increase in inbound visits and a 21% increase in overnight stays. And spend from visitors was also up by 14% on last year between July and September, with visitors spending £194 million in Yorkshire. And it's the highest quarter for the county since records began in 1961, according to Visit Britain. Gary Verity, Sir Gary, as we should call him, he's the chief executive of Welcome to Yorkshire, and he's delighted. He said in a press statement that this is incredible news and testament to the hard work being done by Welcome to Yorkshire and the businesses within the county to make Yorkshire very much front of mind domestically and internationally. So are you in the hospitality industry? Have you seen any benefit? Would you like to come on the show and talk about it? Don't forget, you can get in touch with us and tell us all about it. And I'll be giving the contact details out in a moment or two. Now, the Clydesdale and Yorkshire Bank has announced widespread branch closures coming up across Yorkshire, including branches in Sheffield. The FSB, Federation of Small Businesses, is not impressed. Gordon Millward, who's their regional chairman, said the closures are going to come at a time when small firms across Yorkshire are already struggling to access banking services. He said increasing reliance on limited post office facilities and poor broadband connectivity have seriously impacted the ability of small businesses to bank effectively, and that this hurts their productivity and ultimately their bottom line. He did welcome Clydesdale and Yorkshire Bank's commitment to invest in digital innovation in light of the closures, but Gordon Millward added that FSB's research has found that small businesses feel there's no substitute for in-person advice when tackling complex matters. So some of the branches that are going to close include Sheffield Broomhill and Sheffield Firth Park. Again, will you be affected? Have you got a view? You can get in touch with us, and I'll give out the contact details in a moment or two. Now, many British professionals who are working in the EU say they fear losing the right to practice after Brexit. A select committee hearing took place this week, and it heard from professionals including lawyers, UK HR directors, doctors and others. They said that they fear they may no longer have the right to practice law, medicine or other disciplines if the government doesn't rapidly agree a post-Brexit deal. And the House of Commons Brexit Select Committee hearing also heard from UK business leaders and from HR directors who fear losing access to seasonal workers from the EU will cause some operational difficulties. Now, again, if you've got a view on that, if you think your business is going to be affected, then we'd love to hear from you. You can get in touch with the show and you can put yourself or suggest someone else to come forward to be on the programme as well. Now, meanwhile, the latest figures from the Office for National Statistics have come out and employment growth has slowed a little. Between September and November 2016, the number of people who are unemployed has fallen by 52,000 to 1.6 million. But the number of people in employment has fallen for the second consecutive quarter. And a labour market advisor at the CIPD, Gerwin Davis, says that this comes against a backdrop of relatively strong economic activity and a high number of vacancies, but the abrupt slowing of employment growth suggests employers may be facing increased difficulty with finding suitable candidates. He says that recruitment difficulties are perhaps no surprise given the underlying trend in employment and unemployment. He did add, though, that part of the explanation could lie in the sharp slowdown in the supply of EU nationals. Again, what's your view on that? Let me know. Get in touch. So we're really keen to hear from you. You can put yourself forward to be a guest. You can get in touch with a comment to be on the show or a comment about what we've talked about. All you need to do is email jamie@sheffieldlive.org, text 07904 272 200. Find me on Twitter, Jamie Veitch, or find Sheffield Live on Twitter as well, because whether you're starting or running a business or a social enterprise, whether you're an employer or an employee, we're always keen to hear from you. So it's almost time to turn to our first guest of today. Quick flag up, though, that today from 1 o'clock, Sheffield Live will be doing a special programme for the afternoon. We'll be doing live coverage of the inauguration of the President of the United States of America. And Sheffield Live is working in partnership with Sheffield Democracy Now! And other organisations to bring you that coverage. So do tune in. Our live coverage of events like this is always excellent. And that'll be going on throughout the afternoon. So tune in, please. Now, about time to turn to our first guest. And I was really taken by the fact that today is Fail Friday. That's absolutely nothing to do with President Trump. It is all to do with your New Year resolutions. Friday, the 20th of January, is apparently the day on which most people give up or fail on their New Year resolutions, if they haven't already. It's the day when the UK's collective willpower ebbs to its lowest. But Sheffield Life career and business coach Martin Bennett can help people to change their life for good and stick to their resolutions, meet their objectives in life and in business. So Martin, good morning. Thank you for coming in today.
Good morning, Jamie. It's great to be here.
Well, thanks for taking the time to come into the studio here. And Fail Friday, that's an interesting concept, but you have a particularly interesting background that we're going to come onto it in a moment or two. But before we do that, tell me what your firm, MJB Coaching, does.
Okay, well, I coach in a business context that can be either managers or employees, and that could be around issues such as increasing performance or increasing the skills levels of employees. It could be working with managers who are new to the role and are struggling to adapt. And it could be also about increasing confidence levels. Sometimes it's a case of working with individuals, but it can be working with teams that are a little bit dysfunctional and trying to get them to work together better going forward. So, there was a study a few years ago in America, I think it was a Forbes 1000 study, and it said that coaching actually does increase customer service levels, reduces costs, and leads to better retention of staff. So there are lots of benefits to be had from coaching. Sorry, John.
No, it's all right. I know you're in flow, but that's really interesting what you've said in terms of the benefits of coaching, because it's an investment that people will make, that people will get a return on that investment as
exactly.
well.
Exactly. Yeah.
So interesting people that you coach. In you mentioned individuals, you mentioned people in business there.
Yeah.
And obviously you get a lot of enjoyment out of it. I can see your eyes lighting up as you're talking about the benefits that people gain.
Yeah, I mean, I also work outside of business with individuals. So that's life coaching, career coaching. Career coaching is working with individuals who have kind of lost their way, really, with their career and are looking for a new start, looking to change direction, maybe do something completely new. Life coaching could be dealing with any kind of major decisions in life. It could be looking to move to a new place. It could be things like, you know, stopping smoking, things like that. So in terms of what I do, there's a real variety of situations that I get to come across.
Do you enjoy that variety?
Yeah, it's great. It's great. On the business side of things, I actually combine it with HR consultancy. That was my previous career. I'd done that for the best part of 18, 19 years in a variety of organisations, both locally in London and overseas. And so now I use that knowledge, if you like, to work with businesses. It could be usually small businesses where maybe they don't have an HR department. I can go in there and, you know, troubleshoot, if you like, and identify what some of their issues are, and then coming out of that, there is also sometimes some coaching aspects to working with their employees. So it's almost, you know, there's two sides of things there.
Great. Well, that's really interesting mixture and variety as well. And how long have you been running MJB Coaching? You set the business up last year, I think.
Yeah, I actually registered the company a year ago yesterday, so just on my anniversary.
Right, good stuff. Congratulations.
So we're still going strong. I actually moved back to Sheffield after being away for a number of years, just over a year ago. And I felt that it was something that I'd thought about for a few years in terms of setting up my own business, moving into the coaching field, and it just felt like the right time, coming back and a fresh start, if you like, although coming back to where I'd lived before, and I was looking for a fresh start in my career as well. So that was almost, if you like, my New Year's resolution.
Yes.
Last year.
Which you have then stuck to, clearly.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I did, there's a lot involved, as anybody who's set up their own company knows, there's a lot involved in doing that, particularly if prior to that you've kind of worked in a more regular job, so there's a lot of new aspects that come to you that you might not be aware of, and I actually made use of a coach myself.
Yes.
to keep me on track, if you like. So that was someone that I checked in regularly with, and they also, apart from coaching me, they mentored me as well to actually make some of the right decisions.
Well, it's amazing the number of people who come on this programme who've talked about the value in having a mentor, asking for advice, or having a coach of some description. So people who are in a whole variety of businesses or social enterprises have often spoken about that in the 3 years that we've been running the Business Life programme on Sheffield Life. So you set up the business. You said that you'd had a corporate career, as you know, but also you'd been travelling and you'd been sort of somewhat back and forth. But you came to the conclusion that what you wanted to do was to help people in business and in their lives as well. And
that's right. Yeah.
Your process is quite iterative in terms of finding out what challenges are, I understand, and what's holding them back. So how do you typically work if you go in to coach someone in a business context, for example?
You go in and you ask a lot of questions. You have to investigate where the business is at the moment. Obviously, before you speaking to individual employees, you have to get the context of the business as a whole. You look at the current situation, you look at what that business is aiming to achieve, what its goals are, what they want to get out of the coaching. There's two sides to that. It's what the business wants to achieve, but then it's also working with the employee to see if that marries with what the business is trying to achieve. You explore the number of different options that are available, but you also need to get commitment from the business and also the employee to making the changes.
Yes.
And it's very important to have targets and outcomes. So you need to ask the question, what does success look like? It's okay saying that you want to change, but it's really important to have a clear idea of what that change will look like at the end. And it works with individuals, but sometimes it's the same with businesses in that people and businesses have a lot of sometimes limiting beliefs about, well, we can't do that because we've never done that, or that's just not the way we operate. And it's about trying to work with people to kind of open their horizon to maybe other possibilities about how they may achieve what they're trying to achieve.
Yes. Now, I've noticed that sometimes in the creative industries, there are people, new graphic designers, for example, who believe that they have to compete only on price, and almost they don't deserve to get the bigger jobs. Is that what you would describe as a limiting belief?
Certainly, and I think with things like that, it comes down to confidence as well, because you know throughout my current career and previous career, prices come into these type of decisions. But a lot of time when people are looking to buy in a service, quality of product is really important. I worked with a lady in last year who had previously studied graphic design. Mm. And she had moved away from that. She'd lived abroad, come back, had a family, and she'd got a young daughter. She was in she'd been a part-time, but it became a full-time role in a local company. It wasn't fulfilling her, and she had this desire underneath that to go back to her graphic design background. And when I first spoke to her, there was a lot of issues there around her confidence. She didn't feel like she matched up to the other people that were working in that field. She had anxieties, and we had to do a lot of work around where that actually stemmed from. And sometimes it's just a case of people hear something that's said to them maybe years ago, and then it sticks with them, and that becomes a limiting belief. They've heard it from one person, but to them that becomes a truism. Oh, that must be true, but no one else is saying that to them. So it's working through those kind of issues. I worked with that lady over a period of about 3 months, and then we caught up a couple of months later, and she'd really, really progressed quite a lot. She by the end of what we were doing, she was setting up her own business. She was selling craft items. I actually checked in with her before Christmas, and now she's expanded that into there's a catering aspect to it where she's making cakes as well and linking the two things together. So from working with her at the beginning of last year, that she's come on leaps and bounds.
She's now set up a business. She's running a business with a variety of revenue streams as well.
Exactly.
And it sounds like that was a fantastically satisfying piece of work for you.
Yep.
And has dramatically changed her life, or helped her to achieve goals and objectives.
She's now doing basically what feels more true to her. I mean, one of the exercises that I do is to really drill down into what someone's true values are. So
yes,
you may be in a job that you've done for 10 years, but it's just really not floating your boat, and you've got this passion to do something else. So I really drill down and try and understand what it is that is the essence of that person. And sometimes with coachees, as we call them, that really is kind of a light bulb moment when you kind of feed that back to them and they say, oh, right, there's no sync between what I'm doing and who I think I am.
Yes.
And that really kind of wakens them up to, well, actually, I need to make some change here.
Well, I'd like to come on to some tips and advice, excuse me, for people who to help them make that change. And of course, you've got pieces that you've written on your own website. People can turn to that, and they can quiz you over Twitter and so on. And we'll give those addresses out in a moment or two for doing that. And we'll give some tips out in a moment or two as well. But clearly. Clearly, there are a number of ways in which you can help people, but your own background is really interesting in itself as well. You mentioned at the start of the programme that you'd had a long career in the corporate environment, and I think that included some large businesses that people listening to this programme will be very familiar with. And that you also then did some travelling. So tell me a little bit about the corporate clients that you were working for when you were when you had a job rather than ran a business.
I started out in HR in the late 90s, and I worked for Corus, the big steel manufacturer. Yeah. I think it's Tata Steel now. I also worked for Forge Masters in the local area and Doncaster's, which is a high-tech engineering company. And they are quite traditional manufacturing environments, quite unionized. And those kind of environments make you, you know, I was still in my early 20s when I started out, make you quite resilient, make you tough because you have to deal with a lot of different scenarios. I remember at the end of my first week at Corus, my first HR job, I was making a presentation to the unions about a reorganization within the workplace. So that was a real baptism of fire.
I'm sure it was.
It was. So I spent maybe 7 or 8 years in those sort of environments, and then got some public sector experience in the local council.
Yeah.
But I'd always had the desire, if you like, to see a bit of the world. I'd done some bits of travelling, but then kind of threw it all up in the air and went off, did about 4 or 5 months travelling through Asia, south to north, through 10 countries. You know, Cambodia, Vietnam, China, Japan, the whole sort of range through Asia. And obviously I had a great time. The conclusion of that trip was that I ended up in Australia, in Sydney. And I had a choice to make at that point about whether to stick or go. I decided to stay, put down roots. Set up the career almost that I'd had in the UK, but in a sunnier place.
Yes.
Again, got an employee relations manager role out there with a big manufacturer. I also, in my time out there, worked for their largest telecoms company, Telstra, which is the equivalent of BT. And again, I mean, coming into that new environment, a brand new country, yeah, there are similarities between the Australia and the UK, but it was a brand new environment in terms of the industrial relations framework and the legislation that surrounds that from an HR.
So must have been quite a lot to get to grips with.
So it was a real quick learning curve, and I had to adapt really quickly. And then I got my residency visa out there, and I went into basically a prolonged period of procrastination where I couldn't decide whether I wanted to live in Australia or the UK, and I actually bounced backwards and forwards between the two for a period of maybe 3 or 4 years. And at the end of all that, the relationship I had with an Australian girl ended, and that became, I guess, a wake-up call for me. I think underlying all that was just an anxiety of not wanting to let go of one or the other. And the fact that I wasn't letting go of one or the other meant that I wasn't really moving forward in my life, and it had a consequence at the end.
Right.
And it wasn't necessarily a great consequence. So you know, it was a wake-up call where I sort of had to really think about what I wanted from my life, needed to commit to, and I came back to England, set up in an HR role down at Kew Gardens in London.
Yes.
Worked down there for a few years, and then with my partner, we decided to move back to Sheffield after having our first child. And at that point, it was where I thought, well, actually, you know, things are really developing in my life now. I need to look at taking the plunge when it comes to my career as well. And it just felt like the right time to move things over to working for myself.
So you described, in your words, a prolonged period of procrastination and indecision. And not necessarily choosing whether to live in Australia or in the UK and where to put down roots, that won't be something that all of your clients face, but that they will certainly be in periods of procrastination and indecision about big changes, whether it's leaving a corporate job to set up their own business. I mean, that's something lots of people have spoken about on this program, mm-hmm. about how scared they were of leaving the security blanket of a safe job as an employee to start up what they want to do as their absolute dream, but they're terrified because of all the risk. And then some people just are stuck in flux thinking about that and dreaming about it for 2 or 3 years, yeah. and not doing anything about it except making themselves more and more anxious or upset. And then other people it's about career direction, or it's about business direction in the business they're in. So your own experience of going through, having travelled and obviously enjoyed that, having successfully started a career in another continent even, and learnt everything you had to do, but then your period of sort of indecision of procrastination, that must help you to empathise with your clients now.
Exactly. It sounds a little bit glib, but I almost wish I had a coach when I was in that situation, because what I do with clients is you do work with clients that are in exactly that situation, and as I said previously, it's about really drilling down and understanding what is the most important thing. That there are two paths to be taken, then there's always an element of risk to either. But what I try to make clients understand is you can make a decision, and you can, at some point in the future, if it's not working out, make another decision. So it's about getting over that fear of anxiety. That a lot of the anxiety is in the anticipation.
Yes.
Once you made a decision, that anxiety tends to disappear, and then you're just presented with a new set of decisions or challenges to make. And my own experience kind of really opened my eyes to that. It's rather than thinking things over, really just go for it, you know.
Analysis paralysis.
Exactly. Exactly.
Excellent. So let's have some tips then for people. So whether it's to stick to your resolutions, if you like, or to achieve your business goals, you've come up with some tips to help people, if you like, change their lives. And it'd be fascinating if we can run through those.
I think firstly, people need to start by looking inside themselves and understanding exactly what it is that they want. And if they are looking to make a change, you need to go into that wholeheartedly. You really need to commit to that. You know, if you ask yourself how committed am I to that, it needs to be a 9 out of 10 or a 10 yeah. out of 10. Otherwise, you'll find things that are going to drag you off in different directions. And also, just relax a little bit. You might make yourself a target. Create yourself a target. But don't make it the be-all and end-all. You know, be easy on yourself. If you've said that you're not going to have a drink by the end of February, but you go out for a few drinks this weekend, don't worry about it. Just put that to one side and then get back onto the path that you were taking. You know, that people will... Life will always throw things in the way that kind of take you slightly off course. Surround yourself with supportive people. It's good to get that positive reinforcement. I mean, we all have people in our life that maybe tell us, you can't do that. Why do you think you want to do that? You know, that's not something that you can do. But if you surround yourself with people who are positive, that really helps your own mindset.
Yes.
And also, depending on the complexity of the task, I mean, for example, what I'm looking to do this year is develop some materials around bullying, and hopefully develop that into a book and work with schools. So there's quite a lot involved in that. So it's quite a complex series of tasks that I need to do. So I'm going to break them down and give myself milestones along the way. If you're talking about something like losing weight, for example, it could be that you have an overall target.
Yes.
But give yourself milestones along the way, and give yourselves little rewards. You know, if you want to lose 4 pounds by 3 weeks' time, give yourself a chocolate cake and then get back on it. And also, I think it's really important to absorb as many ideas as possible. Be a sponge. Take in everything that all the advice that people give you, and then work out what works for you and what doesn't, and really really take that in and use it to your advantage.
Yes.
And if you can, I think you mentioned it right at the beginning of the program. While you're looking to make change in your life, if you can perform acts of kindness for other people, then again, that just gives you a really good feeling about yourself, and it helps to create a positive aura and a positive feeling about yourself. I think that really is a good thing that you mentioned at the start of the program there.
Well, it was on your list, so it seemed like a fantastic thing to mention, and it will segue nicely also into the second half of the program as well. So some great tips there. You also, I think you've mentioned traveling to broaden your horizons, and volunteering as well for causes that you're passionate about. And the business community in Sheffield is very, very good at supporting community initiatives, often quite quietly, not to try and get attention or to get media coverage, but simply because Yorkshire wants to do that, and
yeah.
which is great.
And you know, that's certainly something that I'm looking at all sorts of opportunities at the moment. So
yeah.
I mean, I think that's something that I'd like to discuss with you maybe after the program today, to be honest.
Excellent. Well, we've got some great tips there, Martin. And of course, people can find out more about you and the way that you can help people in their business, which would also, of course, include social enterprises as well, and the way you can help people on an individual basis with business coaching, with life coaching, and also, of course, we've talked about the HR expertise that you offer as well. And that's detailed on your website. Do you want to give out the website address for us?
Yeah, it's obviously www.mjbcoaching.co.uk. I'm on Twitter as well, at mjbcoaching. Some people can find me on LinkedIn as well, if you have a LinkedIn profile.
Excellent. So Martin Bennett on LinkedIn as well. So yeah. Thanks so much for coming into the studio today and for discussing your fascinating story, travels, your expertise, and the way that you can help people clearly. And what a lovely story about the woman you supported who is now running her own business. And of course, I know there are many other examples. Get in touch with Martin at mjbcoaching.co.uk or pick his brains on Twitter. And we're going to take a break for a track of music, which has been chosen by Martin. Now, what's the track, Martin? What are we playing?
Well, first of all, Jamie, thanks for having me in this morning. It's been great. I've really enjoyed it. The track that I've chosen is Best of You by the Foo Fighters. It actually came out, I think, just prior to when I went travelling, which I mentioned earlier.
Yes.
And I think I had it on repeat at the time. For me, it's the song, well, it can mean different things to different people, but for me, it's about breaking free from things that restrict you and hold you back and stop you achieving your full potential. So I think it's quite pertinent to what we've been talking about.
Best of You, highly pertinent, chosen by Martin Bennett. Martin, thank you.
Thanks, Jamie.
We're open for Business Live.
This is Business Live, Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM and sheffieldlive.org with me, Jamie Veitch. Business Live is our weekly business and social enterprise programme. We've been talking this morning with Martin Bennett of MJB Coaching. If you've only just tuned in, panic not, because the show will be up on the podcast section of the Sheffield Live website later on today. Now, talking of podcasts, my next guest, Johnny Douglas, is a bit of a podcast aficionado. Not only a listener, but a presenter of a fantastic podcast called Throw Starfish. Have you ever listened to it? If you haven't, you should. They're up to, I think it's 18 episodes now. Is it 18?
I think we're about there.
Yeah.
We record a few ahead, so I never quite know which one has gone exactly live.
Which ones have gone out and which ones are in the vault waiting to be unleashed.
Yeah. Monday morning, first thing, there's a new one.
Excellent. So I'll be listening to that. Thanks for coming in today, Johnny.
An absolute pleasure, as always.
Yeah, great to have have you back here in the Sheffield Live studio, a place you know and we hope love.
Very much so.
But you're a bit of a polymath. You're an expert in many, many things and involved in many, many things too. From your own work in your Made by Design business through to the work that you do with Pecha Kucha, where you run Pecha Kucha with Penny Raven here in Sheffield.
Yep.
And of course Sheffield Soup and other things too, which we'll come onto in a moment or two. Loads to talk about today. But first of all, Sheffield's just been named the most neighbourly city in the UK. Fantastic. And one of the things cited for that was Sheffield Soup.
Yep.
You're involved with that with Penny Raven. You must be really proud.
Yeah, it was great to get a mention. As far as I know, I don't think they were sort of in touch to talk to us about stuff, but hopefully there's lots of information out there about what we do. And yeah, neighbourly is one way of describing it, but I think it's that slightly intangible thing that everybody knows what it is, but sometimes struggles to articulate it, that makes Sheffield Sheffield, really.
Yeah, it does. It makes Sheffield very chef, indeed. And Sheffield Soup, of course, real-time crowdfunding, fantastic event. People pay a fiver on the door, get soup. There are four initiatives standing up to pitch to the audience. They've been chosen by a panel of judges. Anyone can be a judge. You just email and say to Penny, I want to be a judge.
Yep.
And judges whittle it down to four people. The four people make presentations. Now, that could be someone saying, I want to set up this charity, or my existing charity needs this because, or a social enterprise, or it could be a community initiative, or it can be a straightforward business. And then they pitch the audience. The audience votes, and one winner walks away with the pot of money from the door. But probably all four benefit hugely by the exposure and by meeting people and the new connections that they make as well. It's brilliant. We've had many soup winners on the show as well.
Yeah, very much so. So a lot of the, as you mentioned, a lot of people say that the value in pitching at the event and the support they get is worth more than the actual pot of money. But yeah, everybody puts a minimum £5 donation in on the door. And because of that neighbourliness, as it's described in the survey, it's run collaboratively. So no one that's involved in soup makes any money. We run kind of a donations bar to cover some of the overheads. But what that enables us to do is give 100% of the door money straight to the people that are running their project. So like you say, it's crowdfunding but in real time.
Yes.
And the people's money that are in the audience have a direct effect on usually changing someone's life or a number of people's lives because of the project they've helped fund.
So what a lovely initiative it is indeed. And then alongside that, and that's just one of the many things that you're involved in.
It is. I should probably mention as well, the next one of those is on the 22nd of February, and yep. Applications to pitch are now open. So even if you've not got a fully formed idea, do get in touch if you want to some help and support in what you need to submit. It's a really straightforward form, all easily found online, that we can share some links from.
It is indeed. I'll tweet out the link to Sheffield Soup as soon as the show finishes. And applications open now for February. Well worth putting your application in. Excellent. So Pecha Kucha as well. Pecha Kucha Sheffield. Now, Pecha Kucha, what a fantastic event that is. You've been running that for a while as a sort of Sheffield license
2010,
holder.
Yeah. A little trickier to explain, not least of all because of the name that no one seems to quite be able to pronounce.
Did I get it right?
Well, it's technically pronounced Pshakcha, because it's a Japanese word and it means the sound of chit-chat. So when you go into a room and there's that buzz and people chatting and getting along, that is the Japanese word for that noise.
Lovely, indeed. Well, I'm not going to try and mangle it, I'm afraid. It's been since 2010. You've been running it since 2010, of course. It's a global phenomenon.
It is part of a global viral franchise, as they describe it. When we got our license to do it in 2010, we were the 300th city on the planet. I think there's now just over 950 cities across the world doing Pecha Kucha, so Pecha Kucha night. So it's tripled in size over the time that we've been doing it. And we've done 22 events at 18 different venues across the city. So again, that neighbourliness, we try and move around to different neighbourhoods to engage people and bring them along.
Which is brilliant. That's great. And so programme for 2017 coming soon?
Yes, 2017. So for anyone that hasn't been before, it's a kind of a presentation evening, but we describe it as clubbing for thinkers. So they're short presentations where people really have to boil down what they're saying into 20 slides, which auto-advance every 20 seconds. So every presentation is only 6 minutes and 40 seconds long. We mix that up with short video, some of which is inspirational, some of which is funny, some of which might tug on your heartstrings a bit. And then we have some sort of live music or performance, curate the whole evening, compare the whole evening. So it really is kind of a show for 3 hours that hopefully you can't leave the same person you arrived as. And we always theme the show. So we're hoping to do an event with Sheffield Hallam, which we're going to theme polytechnical, I think. We're going to do hopefully one of our most controversial themes, which is going to be British with a question mark at the end to try and understand and define what that means. And then we're going to do a theme together in the summer. So the dates for those at the moment are the 2nd of March, the 6th of April, and the 13th or the 20th of July. We've not confirmed the summer one yet.
So those sound fascinating, from polytechnical through to Britishness, through to your summer event. Now, people will be able to find out more from the PK on Twitter.
Yep, yeah. It's just PechaKuchaSheffield.com, which is PechaKucha, and hopefully we are reasonably visible across the social media platforms.
Excellent. Good stuff. Good stuff. So we've covered PK, we've covered soup, but I wanted to talk about fairness, because that's something that you've been doing a great deal of work on. And there was widespread media attention was given at the start of this week to research showing that a very small number of people globally own an enormous amount of the world's wealth.
Yep.
And on a Sheffield level, you've been working with the folks at Now Then.
Yep.
Who, of course, have also been involved with Festival of Debate as well.
Yeah, they run Curate Festival of Debate under the kind of Now Then Opus Independence banner.
Indeed. And you've been working on their Fair City, Our Fair City initiative, working with them on that, and particularly in terms of fairness in work. So this is fascinating at a time when we hear about businesses not paying the minimum wage even, because, say, they've made their staff queue for half an hour to pass through security to get into the warehouse, and that's mandatory, and they're not paying for that, and they've been they've admitted it. A certain well-known business, through to other businesses using zero-hour contracts and expecting to people at be at their beck and call. Many commentators are talking about the world of work and how we can be fairer in work. Now, at the start of the month, I noted that the UK chairman of PwC, which is a global business, but of course with significant exposure with tens of thousands of employees in the UK and working with blue chip corporate clients, their UK chairman said that if we want to address social inequality, then large firms like ours need to start partnering with social enterprises and need to start actually paying social enterprises to be part of their supply chain. I think that that is, I hope, a positive step rather than a what we used to call greenwash when companies did an environmental issue.
Social wash.
Social wash. A, what's your view? And B, tell us about Our Fair City and the work that you've been doing in terms of fairness in work.
Okay, well, might go for B first, just for a bit of background. So, yeah, working with the team at Now Then and Opus, we have been commissioned, well, we've won the tender for the Sheffield City Council to run the Our Fair City campaign, which came out of some work that was done by the Fairness Commission back in 2013, where Sheffield has actually set their stall out and they want to be the fairest city in the UK. Quite how you measure that is up for debate. But we've won that tender from sort of September this year, and we've changed the orientation of the campaign to be about making Sheffield fairer. through the power of small actions, because if people can actually do something that makes a difference, they're more willing to come back and do more. So we're signing up champions, which also we can get the link out to people. But we want people to pick and choose what they want to do in whatever area they want to do. It might be local, they might want to go to somewhere else. But the power of small actions added up starts to make a difference. It starts to gain momentum and it starts to shift the culture, and we start to steer the ship onto the good ship Sheffield onto a slightly different path. And it's something we definitely need to do. So obviously lots of cities have different areas of poverty and deprived and more affluent areas. But Sheffield, because of the way it's orientated from southwest, regardless of which way around you go, the compass to northeast, over the 83 bus route actually has a difference of 10 years in life expectancy, which is a significant number over a distance of about 5 or 6 miles.
That's astonishing.
It is really. And obviously southwest Sheffield's going in that direction into the Golden Triangle between Leeds, Manchester and Sheffield, as it's known, apparently has the highest concentration of millionaires anywhere outside of London. And yet to the northeast, we've got some of the most deprived areas in Europe. And the reality is, although there is some protection for people that are in a better position, more affluent, maybe have better wealth or money, there's we're all in one big ship, and if it leaks and it sinks, we all go down. And for every glass ceiling, there is a glass floor. And I understand that it's a much bigger risk for someone, and you're much more protective over your glass floor because there's dire consequences to it breaking and only falling glass when you're trying to go up. But we're all in this ship together, and if it starts sinking, we are really going to go down together. And touching on the part A of that, in my opinion, that there's a hell of a lot of changes coming. And we don't need to go down the route of discussing kind of genome sequencing and it exponentially falling in cost, or 3D printing and it getting down to the nanoscale, so we get to this kind of imagined future of Star Trek. There's some significant changes coming in what's often described as the future of work,
yeah,
whereby it's not this Jetson style future that used to be imagined what it would be like 30 or 40 years ago. It is implementable, proven, developed technology that has been worked up to a commercially deployable level that is going into businesses now. And it's not the kind of easy to imagine, no one will work at a checkout anymore because it'll be automated, or there'll be robots in a factory assembling things, or the rise of automation in vehicles will mean that lorry drivers and taxi drivers don't have jobs anymore. We're talking about artificial intelligence and algorithms and computers replacing en masse white-collar workers and the professional services. And that means everyone that works in insurance, everyone that works in accountancy and economics, even the law. I was reading an article last week and it basically said, if you're studying the law now, quit immediately, because the law will exist in the future, but it will only employ 10% of the lawyers. And it's also obviously the huge money market. So the algorithms are already quicker and better at picking stocks and trades at the right time than all of the human beings, apart from one or two incredibly talented people. All of those people are going to end up without jobs, and they're not going to be able to use their transferable skills to go to other professional services because they won't exist either.
Yeah.
And the issue that presents us as a city is basically that our current strategy for North Shoring, because there's a better quality of life here, but it's cheaper for employers to employ their staff moving north from London, is basically not going to happen.
Because if the jobs don't exist, then why? That can't happen. That won't happen. So you're talking about radical changes which are about to happen and already happening. I mean, we've heard about hedge fund managers, hedge funds replacing managers already with computers and with algorithms. You talked about insurance. You talked about the law as well. And this is going to be significant across professional services, as you say, across white collar work. So your strategy with the Our Fair City work and is about a fundamental change in terms of how we work and as a city as well. I mean, is this a sort of E.F. Schumacher small is beautiful type approach? Are we all going to be living in allotments?
Well, I don't know about that. I think that it also presents a lot of opportunity, but only if we're prepared for it. So obviously new jobs in new markets and areas are going to be created, but we're talking here in terms of statistics that Treasury are publishing. So they reckon by 2020, which is this far off place that we imagine as the future, which is less than 3 years away now, 50% of all the people that work in the UK will work as freelancers. So the whole argument over zero-hour contracts is almost a moot point. I'm not saying I agree with them by any stretch of the imagination. They are terrible. But if you work as a freelancer, you have no worker rights because you just only work when the work is available. And over that, the decade from 2020 to 2030, they're also saying, again, timescales up for debate, but this is going to happen, that 60% of the jobs that currently exist in the UK will not exist. And those changes we have to do at that smaller level, and we have to look at the ways that we get our food and the fundamentals of shelter and water, and now as it's considered the internet being a human right. But we need to start planning for it now because it's going to get pretty messy. And the Our Fair City campaign is looking at four micro campaign areas, which is fairer food, fairer work, fairer money and fairer futures. Yeah. Obviously, fairer work and fairer futures are fairly well connected. And fairer money is a bit of a trickier subject because it kind of needs fixing at its most basic fundamental level when money is generated. But again, we'll not get into that. But it's about getting people to start thinking and looking at the little things that they can do that make a difference to each other and their neighbourhoods and their communities that mean that we are thinking about things, debating things and discussing things, which is obviously how the Festival of Debate feeds in really nicely for some of the stuff that's coming, because it's about being engaged in a discussion and talking about these things and looking at ways, because no one necessarily has the answer. And with the kind of second and third order of technology and the way that it's evolving, no one can predict it. So we need to be constantly discussing it and changing our plans in real time. And if by doing small things that make a difference for each other, we're creating relationships and bonds and reinforcing our communities, we can deal with whatever's happening. But at the moment, we need to start engaging in a discussion. We need to kind of find people that are wanting to do things and connect them up and join them up, which is why we're signing up champions and giving them hopefully small tasks that are maybe time or task-based that they can do and start to make a difference for themselves and each other.
Excellent. And people can find out more about that, of course, at Our Fair City article on the Now Then magazine website.
Yep, I think there's an it's .co.uk for Our Fair City for the actual website. And again, it's all over social media.
Okay, well, we'll tweet the links out to that. And, well, what a fascinating discussion. I'd love to continue, but we're going to have to leave the studio so that our friends from the folk music show can come in and play fantastic folk music for 2 hours from 10 a.m. through to noon. So please, listeners, stay tuned to that. It's great stuff. And then remember, from 1 o'clock today, Sheffield Live will be giving you live coverage as the new president of America is inaugurated, which I think means that it's a good time to play Johnny's choice of track of music. We've been talking about the end of the world of work as we know it. We're talking about a new president coming into America that many people are very unhappy about. We're going to play out with a track of music chosen by our second guest today, Johnny Douglas. And this is REM. It's the end of the world as we know it. Thanks for listening today.
This is Sheffield Live.
We're open for business live.